And good afternoon. It is a Thursday, July 2017, and we have a great show coming up for you today here on the Now program. You will not want to leave your radio dial for the next 2 hours. We are going to be joined momentarily by Ohio Democratic Chairman David Pepper. David Pepper is going to talk about the state of health care in Ohio and a little bit of everything going on in the world as it relates to today. Then at 12:30 today, we're going to be joined by Tanner Hale. Tanner Hale was a candidate for city council 2 years ago. He's been on the program a lot of times. He's currently in Columbus, Ohio, attending college. And he's going to come on and give us his thoughts on what's going on in the world as we speak. And then next hour, we have a very interesting guest, first-time visitor to this program, Lizzie Post. Lizzie Post is the great-granddaughter of Emily Post. So it will be Lizzie Post, the great-granddaughter of Emily Post, coming up at 1:15, and we will learn all about etiquette and all the things that go with it. Is there a certain etiquette that we should all follow? Is there an etiquette for cell phones? Is there an etiquette for email? All the things that have changed since the days of her great-grandmother, Emily Post, who became the famous etiquette queen. And I was reading an article this morning that at one point, Emily Post was considered to be the most influential person in America, right behind Eleanor Roosevelt. So think about that. Emily Post was one of the most influential women in the world, in America at least, right behind Eleanor Roosevelt, who was First Lady of the United States at the time. So we will have her great-granddaughter, Lizzie Post, on next hour and talk a little bit about etiquette. But this hour will be all about the political world and what we have going on. It does not look like healthcare is going to pass the Senate. We'll know more about that when we talk to Ohio Democratic Chairman David Pepper, but it seems to be that way right now. And we'll also talk to Tanner Hale because he stays very involved in that. And also, I think we all feel sad today that John McCain yesterday was diagnosed with brain cancer. Just a horrible, horrible disease. But certainly, if anybody can come through it, anybody who's led an heroic life, it would be John McCain as a soldier, as a prisoner of war, or as a candidate for president. He just is a very, very tough guy. So I'm sure he's taking this diagnosis the best that you can. And hopefully his family is able to take it the best that they can. And it's just very difficult for a family to face face something like that. But you know what? We're going to take a quick break and hopefully come back with Ohio Democratic Chairman David Pepper right after this short, important break on WWGH Radio. Don't you go anywhere.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the voices you want to hear. Marianne Mike, poem by Nan Britton, the mother of the daughter of President Warren G. Harding.
And it's called Her Eyes by Nan Britton. Sometimes her eyes are blue as deep sea blue, and calm as water stilted at evenfall. I see not quite my child in these blue eyes, but him whose soul shines wondrously through her. Serene and unafraid he was, and knew how to dispel the fears in other hearts. Meeting an anxious gaze, all tranquility. These are her father's eyes. Sometimes her eyes are blue, the azure blue of an October sky on mountaintops. I do not see my child in these blue eyes. They are the eyes of him whose spirit glowed with happiness of soul alone with far deeper in the depths of bluest eyes, whose smile a thing of joy it was to see. These eyes, this smile, are his. Sometimes her eyes are of a tired gray blue, filled with the sadness of an age-old world. And then again, my child's not in these eyes. These are the eyes of one whom grief assailed, whom disappointment crushed with its great weight. Around his head a halo memory casts, reflecting that refiner's fire which purged him clean and made him what he was. Sometimes, in child amaze and wonder blue, her baby eyes are lifted up to mine. These only are the eyes she brought with her, and so I fold her close within my arms and talk of dolls and stars and mother love, for well I know that pitifully soon she will be grown, and then her eyes will hold only the deeper lights his own eyes knew.
Ah, you ought to get a job reading books, Marianne. That was very good.
That's great.
Thank you.
That is the introduction to the President's Daughter.
WWGA Radio 107.1 FM, the voices you want to hear. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
Hey, Scott Spears back with you here on WWGH Radio on this Thursday afternoon, 22 minutes coming up on 23 minutes past the hour, and we're very happy to be joined via telephone by Ohio Democratic Chairman David Pepper. Chairman Pepper, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing very well. I want to get right into it because there's just a multitude of news, but let's start with health care, which is something very important to the people in Ohio. It kind of looks like this health care bill that the Republicans are trying to push through may die in the Senate. What do you think is going to happen?
I hope it does. I'm not convinced yet that this thing seems to have more lives than a cat. Obviously, it died a week ago. Then the idea of just repealing straight up, I think, also will probably die. But now there's talk that they're trying to throw more money at some of the wayward senators. And so to those who are concerned, my only advice would be to keep calling to make sure the pressure is on. You know, one of the most important senators on this is Rob Portman. He's kind of gone back and forth. He was part of the original working group. Then late, he came out against it. Apparently, he still now is working on this latest version. So, you know, a lot of Ohioans have weighed in. It's been very good to see so many Ohioans basically demand that there be a better process in this. And my hope is people will keep doing that until it's clear that it's not going to move forward.
What is behind President Trump's idea to just repeal it and we'll work on the replacement later? How would that benefit him?
That is as irresponsible an idea as I could imagine. I mean, he's saying that at the same time he says, let Obamacare fail. And, you know, this is not a game. You've got millions of people whose lives, and you got states like ours whose budgets and whose ability to deal with things like the opioid crisis are all tied into things like Medicaid expansion, things like pre-existing conditions. And this idea that you just repeal it and hope that you do something in the next 2 years that they clearly have not been able to do, it just makes no sense, just like letting Obamacare fail doesn't. You know, let's be clear. Republicans control every part of Washington right now. So if they aren't able to get to 50 votes with all that we're seeing, the idea that you would just repeal it, and especially to get close to elections next year, that somehow in 2 years they'd figure out something that they have had 7 years to figure out but have never gotten to 50 votes on, I just think it would be irresponsible. What needs to happen here is people call a timeout. Democrats and Republicans work together on ways to fix problems that we know are out there around cost and around certain areas that don't have access to enough competition. And that can be done. I mean, I'm a firm believer the policy solutions exist. The politicians are the problem right now. And if you got rid of the rancor and you got rid of the people who insist on repeal or nothing, or at least they were sort of sent to the back of the room, and the people who are more interested in working together were able to come forward, I actually think you'd have solutions. I think the policy people would I see articles every day about do this, do that, do the other. It's the politicians that are the problem. And my hope is if this thing finally does die, that we can finally have Democrats and Republicans come together to solve some of these things.
if it does die, and by most account, it looks like that may be what happens. What is the biggest problem with Obamacare if that is what stays? What needs to be fixed there?
So what I would say, I wouldn't say it's even a problem with Obamacare. It's bigger than just Obamacare. It was a problem before and continues to be. Is the cost of health care for people are for families are just too high. And I think efforts that from both sides to try and deal with costs, whether it be of insurance plans, whether it be of drugs and pharmaceuticals, I mean, to me, that's the average person, I think, would say that's what is still a problem for them. And, you know, that we could debate all day. I think, you know, if you look after Obamacare, a lot of the cost increases went down, but it still went up some, but the growth rate was lower. But I think that's a huge issue. And there also are issues where, you know, there used to not be this individual payer market. There is one now, but obviously in some places you want more competition. And there are ways, again, policy solutions to deal with that. And again, more competition also leads to more choices and hopefully lower costs. So those are some of the biggest issues. And I think these are issues that if the politicians would just get out of this repeal or no repeal fight and say, let's just solve problems, I think you'd have more than enough ideas come forward on how to deal with them. But that just hasn't, for 7 years, the mindset has not been that. It's basically been get rid of it all or nothing. And, you know, what's amazing about the last 6 months is that it's shown that those who've been clamoring for repeal and replace had never thought through what replacement looked like. It was all political talk. There was no plan, no solution. And the last 6 months have really exposed that. And it makes it clear that for 7 years we've been debating this every election, but people who were calling for a repeal and replace had no idea what they had in mind to replace it. And that's really a shame. I mean, what a waste of time. And what a bunch of nonsense politics we've all seen for a long time.
If this bill does pass, people in Ohio are looking very closely. If this bill would pass, what would that mean here in Ohio?
So it would be, and this is why John Kasich has been so clearly against it, and I think why Rob Portman's been hesitant. It would be devastating in numerous fronts. First, you'd see, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, at least families across the state, lose access to Medicaid that they have relied on, potentially other forms of coverage. So, you know, in the middle of an opioid crisis, especially where that Medicaid is the one way most people are getting treatment if they're getting it. So you'd have an immediate loss of coverage. You'd also have a much harder time dealing with the problem we're already failing to deal with, which is the opioid crisis. But then it even goes beyond that. You know, for those people who you also, by the way, have the pre-existing conditions problem, that all of a sudden people who have pre-existing conditions, no fault of their own, all of a sudden will have a much tougher time getting insurance or will pay through the nose to do it. A lot of people in their 50s will see the cost, particularly in their 50s, will see the cost deductibles go way up. And then the thing that gets lost sometimes is even for people who maybe would say, well, I would still be okay, you know, one of the largest industries in Ohio is the healthcare industry. You go to places like Toledo and Lima and all over the state, a lot of the biggest employers, sometimes the biggest industry alone is healthcare, you know, nurses, doctors, those who support those hospitals. We've seen the Ohio Hospitals Association has said they fear that one out of four hospitals in Ohio would close. A lot of those would be rural hospitals. And so you wouldn't just see an effect on communities, on things like and families and their coverage. They wouldn't just see higher costs. You'd also see a real economic impact. And that's one reason why, you know, you've seen no one louder in the state calling Rob Portman, you know, asking the legislature and Congress to not do this than people like the Ohio Hospital Association, who have been saying you will send hospitals underwater if this happens.
You brought up our Governor John Kasich there, who obviously does not support this bill, but he will be leaving us as governor next year. And on the Republican side, you've got a lot of candidates so far, the Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, the Attorney General Mike DeWine, Secretary of State John Newsted have all thrown their name in. Who on the Democratic side will go up against one of these heavyweights in this gubernatorial race?
Well, let me first say one of the saddest parts about what you just described is that three out of the four have all said they do not support Medicaid expansion. So even though John Kasich says it's critical to Ohio to keep it, three out of the four people, I don't know if Husted's weighed in, but Taylor, Jim Renacci, and Mike DeWine have all said they don't support Medicaid expansion. So all those horrible consequences I just mentioned, they have already said as governor they would literally, you know, usher in policies that would lead to those consequences. So we feel very good about our side of the aisle in terms of candidates. We have some very strong candidates running. Betty Sutton, a former congresswoman from Northeast Ohio, Nan Whaley, the mayor of Dayton, Joe Schiavone, a former Senate Minority Leader from Youngstown area, Connie Pillich, a former candidate for treasurer. You know, of the eight people, the four you mentioned and the four I mentioned, Mike DeWine's really the only one that's known by, you know, a majority of the state. You know, Betty Sutton and others are known where they're from, but the truth is we feel very good that our candidates, once whoever wins that primary, will either be running against, you know, three of the four on their side that aren't that well known. You know, outside of insiders, most people don't know who John Husted is or Mary Taylor. And Mike DeWine is honestly such, he's been around so long. If you are an Ohioan who thinks that 7 years of trickle-down economics, of this charter school scandal, being the leader in the country in opioid overdoses, we've trailed the national recovery for 50 straight months or so in terms of job growth. Our wages were where they were 30 years ago. If you're someone who is eager to change that, I'm here to tell you Mike DeWine's not going to solve that. He's been part of this system for decades. If you want to change a direction, Betty Sutton or Nan Whaley or our candidates, I think, are going to have a lot more to offer you than more of the same. And Ohio is literally, if you look around the country, by almost any measurement, Ohio is really struggling right now. I mean, the governor himself said just a few months ago we're on the verge of a recession. In the middle of a national recovery, Ohio, by our own governor, is on the verge of a recession. I think that calls for a new direction if it's that bad, and it is that bad.
It's interesting. The last time we had a gubernatorial race, John Kasich won pretty handedly against the Democratic candidate, Fitzgerald. And right. Donald Trump last year won Ohio by a pretty good margin over Hillary Clinton. How will the Democratic Party overcome that?
So that's a good question and the right question. So Ohio has a very clear history where Ohioans like balance, and when they want change, they go for change. That's where Obama, that's frankly, I think, one reason why things slipped in 10. But in 5 years, when Republicans were in the White House, Democrats have actually gone on to win statewide almost every time. It's a very clear pattern because, you know, like we're seeing with Trump, people get, you know, often presidents of either party overreach, and then people want to see it. So in 18, we think 18 is a lot more like a year like 1982. Ronald Reagan won in 80. 2 years later, Democrats actually had a very good year in Ohio. So normally you see this pattern of someone wins the White House, and 2 years later, the other side wins the state. And in the end, that's just history. But if we have good candidates well organized, and if we're making the case that Ohio needs a new and we offer it, and one doesn't, or the other candidates, I think we actually have a very good chance to win in 18. Of course, we also have Sherrod Brown running for re-election, and I think Sherrod, more than just about anyone in Washington, fights for the working person, man or woman, fights for higher wages, fights for the issues that Ohioans are most concerned about. And so I think he's a very strong candidate at the top of the ticket.
And my final question, because it would be hard to ignore on the national level, President Trump said today in a New York Times interview that if he had known that Attorney General Sessions was going to recuse himself, he would not have put him in that position. And now he has also said that Mueller, who is investigating the case against collusion with Russia, Trump has said that if he gets involved in family finances, that he would fire him, and Mueller right. is expanding. What's going on in Washington?
All of that is completely inappropriate. First of all, you don't get to tell the special prosecutor what he gets to look into. No one else gets to do that. There's no reason the president should either. Mueller has every right to follow the trail wherever it leads. If Donald Trump doesn't think there's any issues, he should welcome. Look at my business, look at everything, and I've done nothing, so therefore you'll find nothing. The last thing he should want to do is add to more speculation. But every time he talks like this, he makes most people think, well, he must be hiding something if he's trying to sort of bully a prosecutor from looking into something. Normally that doesn't work very well, and I don't think that's going to work very well for Donald Trump. And on the Sessions thing, I mean, he's basically saying that he wishes someone who said they have a conflict of interest were investigating something over which they had a conflict of interest. That's just completely inappropriate. When you recuse yourself, it's because you're saying, I can't be unbiased or I can't be viewed as unbiased on that matter. You know, in the law, that's very clear that if you recuse, you shouldn't be involved. So Donald Trump is basically saying that he prefers someone who themselves thinks they would have a bias or a perception of bias. He wants them to look into it. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, as someone said, basically he's just sort of advertising, I'm willing to be a lawless president. I'm willing to bully a prosecutor to not look into certain things, and I'm willing to have someone oversee an investigation even when they have a conflict over that investigation. So I'm sure his lawyers and others are really regretting that he did that interview, because everything he said was basically an advertisement that he's willing to basically run a lawless White House.
Let me ask you this question in parting, because I think it's interesting that in a lot of people's lifetimes who are listening to this program, they have seen a president resign and get pardoned. They have seen a president, that's Nixon, for those of you who haven't. They have seen Bill Clinton get impeached and stay and become very popular. And now we're on to another president being investigated, Donald Trump. Does it look bad? The information that keeps dripping out, the investigation that's going on, the things he says in interviews, are we in an area of impeachment, resignation? It just seems to not get any better.
I mean, the parallels are there. I think the number one thing before we get to that point is to simply let the investigation play out. And I think, you know, the wheels of justice turn maybe slowly sometimes, but I think the facts will come out, and I can't tell you what they are. There's obviously one of the things that when you ask if it looks bad, what has looked really bad is that almost everyone involved, from Donald Trump Jr. to Donald Trump to Jared Kushner to Jeff Sessions, they've all been caught lying about having met with Russians. They've all said they haven't. They've said it again and again. They've sworn to it. Mike Pence has said it. It turns out that they keep lying about it. And so, obviously, that's a red flag. Donald Trump firing Comey was a red flag. His interview yesterday is a red flag. But at some point, I think he's learning you can't stop the wheels of justice. I think the investigation will go forward. And as the facts come out, I think, you know, there'll be some decisions. Maybe they find in the end that Russia interfered, but no one in America knew anything about it. And then it probably doesn't go anywhere, but we should all try and figure out how to keep Russia from ever interfering again. If they find that there was a lot of overlap or some collusion with the Trump campaign, then obviously there'll be a lot more consequences. We'll have to see, but what continues to be baffling, or actually what continues to make the White House look so suspect, is they continue to be caught literally lying about having had no meetings. And then they also Donald Trump looks like everything he's consumed with is trying to stop investigations from looking into him, which, if you haven't done anything wrong, is something that you wouldn't be doing, because it makes him look so guilty of something. And you know, that's why it does keep getting worse, and people get more suspicious rather than less.
Ohio Democratic Chairman David Pepper, thank you so much for coming on, and I hope we can talk again real soon.
Thanks. Great chatting.
Thank you. Take bye-bye. Care. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Tanner Hale right after this. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you know, Charlie Evers is a Marion radio legend, and you can catch him right here on WWGH 107.1 FM and streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Charlie also takes your calls on anything under the sun by calling this number, 740-383-9944. Speedy delivery.
The Fahey Bank Charlie Evers Show, every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m.
on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
We thank Ohio Democratic Chairman David Pepper for being our guest there just moments ago, 41 minutes past the hour. And don't forget, coming up next hour, we're going to be joined by Lizzie Post at 1:15, the great-granddaughter of Emily Post. So we're going to learn about etiquette a little bit next hour. But for the rest of this hour, we're going to be joined by a gentleman who's been on this program many times, ran for city council here in Marion not too long ago. It's always good to visit with him and get his opinions on things going on in the world, Tanner Hale. Tanner, how are you?
Doing, Scott. How are you doing?
Doing good. Want to get right into this because we've got 19 minutes here and there's a lot to talk about. Do you think healthcare, the healthcare bill that's in the Senate right now, is going to pass the Senate?
I don't believe it will. And even if it looks like they have the vote, at any given time, the pressure that's been going on across the country and in these individual states is just overwhelming. And it's kind of hard to keep up with the CBO numbers at times because it seems that every time the CBO comes out, it just gets a little more frightening. The one I saw was 32 million people would be booted health insurance if they were to move forward and repeal Obamacare. And that's just absolutely mind-boggling. I can't imagine that the United States Senate would move forward with this bill, not only on a humanitarian basis, but politically. I mean, what does it look to the rest of the country if the Senate Republicans were to move forward with a bill that would kick so many people off of their health insurance? So I don't think it's going to pass. Especially with John McCain being out now, they're really running out of room to work with to make sure that they have the votes in line so they can move forward with a repeal.
Okay, if the repeal does not happen, then Obamacare stays. What do you foresee happening if that happens?
Well, I envision it's going to end up staying, and then the Republicans are going to have to go across the country and explain to voters why they didn't accomplish what they promised they were going to do, especially when they own the Senate, they own the House, they own the presidency. They could have got this accomplished in the same way that Obamacare was accomplished back when President Obama was in office and that the Democrats had the Senate and the House. So politically, that's the ramifications. Personally, I would like to see that the Obamacare does not get repealed, and that we can keep that landmark legislation in place, which helps or drove people to more affordable health care. It prevented insurance companies from denying from pre-existing conditions and a lot of the amazing factors that Obamacare was able to bring in. But I think the Republicans really have to ask themselves, what this is going to do. I mean, maybe it's a blessing that they don't repeal it, and I hope they don't, but politically, I think they have to do it because that was what they campaigned on. That's what won them the House. That's what won them the Senate. But public opinion has certainly moved on this issue a lot, and the needle has certainly started to move more towards recognizing Obamacare's place and realizing that if we repeal that bill, it would just be catastrophic.
Well, they're stuck then because if they repeal the bill, you feel it would be catastrophic. If they don't repeal the bill, it would be bad for them because then they have to explain why they didn't do it. How did they get into a no-win situation?
Well, they were in a similar situation about 4 or 5 years ago that the Democrats are in right now. They needed to resist. They needed to show that they could stand up, even though they were in the minority party. And this was important. Obamacare wasn't popular across the country. They were still moving the needle to try to explain to the public why we needed to implement Obamacare, why we needed to take on the insurance companies, why we needed to expand Medicaid across all 50 states. But this is a much different time because, as we talked about, the needle has moved. So right now, I think that the Republicans are looking on, and a lot of them are confused as to why they can't get this done when they put 50 repeals of Obamacare onto the floor, and one time they even got it out of the Senate. And this is just truly embarrassing on their end if they can't do something that they put forward 50 times and they were able to be consensus on. I mean, even a lot of Democrats have even discussed the flaws of the ACA. But as we see, and I just saw the this morning a poll, CNN notification came up on my phone showing that 35% of America believes that the Republicans should just ditch this idea altogether. They shouldn't try to repeal it. They shouldn't try to replace it. That is a long way away from where we were 5 years ago when the Republicans were in the minority. So that, to me, was extremely interesting. And I think it goes to show that the American people really stood up on this issue and put the pressure on them. And they said, hey, you represent us. And if you repeal this bill and you take away my health insurance, I will make sure that you don't have a job when the next election comes around. So I thought it was truly powerful.
It's interesting. You mentioned it earlier that they do control the executive branch, president, Republican, the Senate, and the House. Why, even if it's not perfect, can't they get something through? They don't even need one Democratic vote. Why can't they get it through?
Because the margin of error they have is just so razor thin. And you look across the country, and as we can tell, every single time, at least 45 senators are immediately on board saying, absolutely, we're going to move forward, we're going to tug the party line. I made a promise to the voters that I was going to repeal Obamacare, and I'm going to make sure I see that out. And those other seven, you look at people like Dean Heller and Susan Collins, and even Rob Portman has been given points in the opposition column to repealing Obamacare because of the cuts it makes to Medicaid. You have those six or seven senators that they're skeptical. And the way that the parties are structured right now and the way that they caucus, they understand people like Dean Heller and Susan Collins that they have the power to stand up to the majority party. They have the power to influence that bill in the direction that they want to go. And you would think that people like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, among the most conservative factions of the U.S. Senate, would automatically be for repeal all the time. But no, they've actually been out in opposition too, because there are senators that want to change the provisions of Obamacare. They want to change some of the language that's involved, and some of them believe it's not going far enough. Some believe it's going too far. There's just an extreme amount of discussion that's being waged on that side of the aisle about what they need to do to repeal, and they can't agree on it. They all want to repeal and replace it. They just don't know how. And this is how they've ended up in the dilemma they're in. And because of it, I don't think they're going to repeal it. They didn't repeal it quick enough for public opinion to catch up and say, hey, what you're doing is wrong.
President Trump certainly is in the news today. The big story this morning, in an interview with the New York Times, he says that if he had known that Attorney General Sessions was going to recuse himself, he would not have given him the position. And then later on in the morning, Mueller, who's doing the investigation, said he was going to look into the finances of the Trump business, and President Trump said that if he gets into the family finances, he would fire Mueller. Okay, let's start. What's going on in Washington?
Well, this story just keeps getting more and more puzzling, and we've already seen the defense and the justification for colluding with a foreign adversary just expand over time. It went from, this is a hoax, the Dems are making this up, this is all an excuse because they lost the election, to, well, Donald Trump Jr. was just doing opposition research, to, the White House counsel is still trying to further the narrative that this was still about the Russian adoption thing, which we all know by proof of Donald Trump Jr.'s own emails that the meeting that they attended in Trump Tower with seven other people including the campaign manager, including a Russian lawyer that allegedly has been connected to the Kremlin, to Russian-American lobbyists, it's troubling. And I'll admit, when I saw that Donald Trump made that comment about Jeff Sessions, my jaw dropped. Now, I was not supportive of Jeff Sessions becoming attorney general because I was worried he would do the opposite of what he has done as attorney general. And while I'm not satisfied with his policies, I am impressed that he stood up and he recused himself at the start of this. But it goes to show you where Donald Trump's allegiances, as far as to his values were, when he appointed Jeff Sessions to become attorney general. Because he wanted to put someone in a place to obstruct, to resist, and to make sure that this investigation didn't see justice. I think that's extremely troubling. And I think it's continuing to further the narrative that he obstructed justice when he fired Director Comey. And if it weren't for his White House aides to make strong recommendations to the president, he was going to fire the special prosecutor. That, I think that we're looking at a present-day Nixon. And I think this is an opportunity for all people across the country, whether they liked Trump, whether they hated Trump, whether they thought Trump was the greatest thing since sliced bread, or if they think he's the devil himself, to look on and say, we can't have this. The sanctity of our democracy and our country and our institution and our Constitution warrants us as Americans to stand up and condemn this behavior.
Okay, we can't have this. What does that mean?
This administration has just been plagued in scandals, and we have seen the bedrocks of America be put into question. We've never seen a bigger hatred towards media. We've never seen the kind of behaviors that the White House is excelling. I cannot believe that the White House has press briefings that are oftentimes audio only, and even reducing the amount of press briefings they give, they're reducing the significance of them. The White House isn't honest with us. They don't tell us the truth. They collaborate with other people to change the narrative of the stories. We already know that they were in contact with Donald Trump Jr. to make sure that his story was straight on the Russia meeting. And I'm just giving among the few examples that we have seen across this administration. Interesting thing, I was looking at a statistic on fact-checking, and I don't know what the exact number is at this point, but as of a couple weeks ago, Donald Trump has made nearly 700 false or misleading statements since he's been in the White House. People can stand ideas sometimes that they may disagree with, but what they can't stand is when their government isn't square with them. And that's the kind of behavior we're seeing in the White House right now.
So the end result to all this should be what?
Well, as of right now, as the investigation is impending over what we believe to be obstruction of justice, and as the FBI continues its probe to better understand what happened in the 2016 election in reference to Russia, I think that we have to start waging serious discussions about, is the president still fit to be in the office? Now, personally, I do not believe that there is enough evidence yet to move forward with articles of impeachment, although a Democratic representative has already moved forward to try to put articles of impeachment on the floor. I think both parties understand that there's nothing yet, there's no smoking gun, but we have to watch the investigations play out. We have to continue to be mindful that there is several conflicts of interest of President Trump continuing himself into this office. And as far as the end result, generously, I think that we just have to look towards 2018 and 2020 and send him a clear message about what we want in this country, about our values, and send in representatives and send in senators that are going to listen to the American people and not try to strip 32 million people of their health insurance.
If it is found that Donald Trump has truly done something criminal here and he is impeached or resigns, like President Nixon did, what do you think should happen? Should we just follow the lines of secession and give it to Pence if he's not included, or give it to Paul Ryan? What do you think would happen in that situation?
Well, the institution of our Constitution is much more important than any political fight that ever happens in this country, and making sure that we protect that infrastructure is more important than anything. So we do have to go down the secession line. Mike Pence should be the president of the United States. And I mean, and as you said, that comes down to whether he was involved in this or not. To our knowledge, he has no, he had no ties. There is a smoking gun that connects him to any meddling in Russia's meddling to the United States election in 2016. Now, his comments have been troubling about that. He said that there were no connections. He said that there are no ties. There was no collusion, which we believe to be false. But you know, Mike Pence would have to become president of the United States. And while I still disagree with values, I can live with someone in the office that I disagree with, but I can't live with someone in the office who not only is dishonest, but has reached the mannerism that he reached in colluding with a foreign adversary, or at least obstructing.
Do you think that if the story is Donald Trump is impeached or resigns because of collusion with Russia to defeat Hillary Clinton, that the country would just stand for saying, well, Hillary Clinton, they stole it from you, you really won, too bad, sorry about your luck?
I really do believe that Hillary Clinton has a basis to run in 2020. And you know, obviously that decision comes down to her. But a lot of voters still reject her. She still has high negatives. And it seems as though the Democratic base doesn't want to prepare for another Hillary Clinton run. Again, that decision comes down to her. But when this whole Russia thing comes out, I think that it's more of something negative against Trump than something that Hillary Clinton can say, see, I was robbed. I just don't know if the American people are going to see it that way. Again, if we have to hit that dilemma, and part of me hopes we really don't. As an American, I really want to hope that the President of the United States' campaign didn't collude with a foreign adversary. But if that were to come, I'm not 100% that the American people would see it as Hillary Clinton had an injustice against her.
Well, the American people might not see it, but I'm just talking about her personally and the Democratic Party, because to my knowledge, we have never had an issue where an election was stolen. And do you really want to go down in history as the person who had the election taken from you and nobody did anything about it?
Oh, absolutely not. I feel it, and I could certainly empathize to why she's upset right now. She's got to be frustrated. I'm sure she's handling this 100 times better than probably I would have handled it. But, again, I think that they're going to take a broad scope across America and see where her support still lies. And that's where I'm saying I'm not 100% sure the American people would back another Hillary Clinton run.
A run, I agree with you on a run. I don't think that's what it would be. I think what it would be awful hard for Pence. If this goes down that there was collusion, and I'm not saying there was, but if it went down that way, I think it's awful hard to believe that Pence, who was the head of transition, did not know anything. So I think immediately that's going to disqualify him. So you would have to go to Paul Ryan. And I'm just not sure that the country, if it was Bill Clinton, basically I lied under oath, well, yes, then I think it would go to a Paul Ryan or an Al Gore or Newt Gingrich at the time, because I think people would say, well, he committed a crime, he had to go, we've got to replace him with the line of secession. But the crime itself is colluding with the foreign power to stop one person. And I don't think anybody thought that Ford would pardon Nixon. I don't think anybody ever thought we would have had a president who was never elected president nor vice president. And I don't think it's out of the range to believe that if the papers read Trump resigns or is impeached because of colluding with the Russian government to defeat Hillary Clinton, that the election's reversed, that it's a do-over. People came out in the streets the night after he won just because he won. If they find out that she really won, I don't think there's ever been a case brought before a Supreme Court or Congress or Senate like that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, as far as, I'm no legal expert, and I really think that we'd have to have a better understanding at the time as a country on what we'd have to do. I think that there would have to be some sense of justice, and it would be rightfully warranted if someone was robbed of this election, especially when they get 3 million more votes than the other candidate. But I don't know what we'd have to do in the sake of the Constitution to right this wrong. I mean, you're asking a question that I simply, I don't even know where we would begin on. And I think that it isn't a question more of that I'm supposed to have an answer on, as just a discussion piece of what do we do from there? Because it's not anything that's ever happened before. We can't point back in history and say, oh, this is what we did then, so we can do this now. I think that we would just be in a constitutional crisis. And if we do stick to what most people would believe to be the constitutional infrastructure and the system that we put in place, I think that people would still be upset that there was still injustice, that the person that was supposed to take the oath didn't actually get to take the oath. So we may have to revisit that altogether if we really hit that dilemma, but I wouldn't even know where to begin to sort out that crisis.
It's going to be fascinating. Tanner, I always thank you for coming on. It's always a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much. We're going to break, coming back with Lizzie Post, the great-granddaughter of Emily Post, in just about 10 minutes.
Jones Hearing Care Practitioner. 65 million Americans